FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today is February 28th, 2017, last day of the month. Hard to believe that we are 2 months through the year. It seems like they were just dropping the ball the other day. But speaking of dropping the ball, we've got this millennial generation. I was reading a study. It just came out last week. Said they are the most narcissistic generation in history. And well, we're going to get to what narcissism is and why it's bad, but got me to thinking. And then, sure enough, across my desk comes an expert in the topic, on the topic, Dr. John Huber. Dr. Huber, you're a clinical forensic psychologist from Austin, Texas, place where my son lives. So I figured, hey, let's get you on the show and talk about this. So welcome to the show, Dr. Huber.
Thank you, Kerry. I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, so first, I guess we got to define exactly what narcissism is. And of course, like anything else in psychology, there's different flavors, right?
Right. In general, narcissism is basically the pursuit of personal gratification from your own vanity or egotistical admiration of your own attributes. Now, it's not the same as egocentrism, but in general, you get pleasure and you hunt for pleasure from what you believe yourself to be.
Right. And it goes back to the Greek mythology of Narcissus, who is so beautiful, and he falls in love with the reflection of himself in the pond, and he can't take his eyes off of himself. And like much of Greek mythology, it's allegorical, I guess.
Yes.
Right. So we carry this into to modern day America, and I guess the country, the world's become a melting pot for narcissism, and there's different flavors. I mean, arguably, our last president and our current president could be assessed with this attribute.
On the surface, it looks like that. I haven't assessed either one of them, so I couldn't tell you definitively. Right. But yes.
Without being their treating clinical psychologist, right? We don't really know, but correct. On the surface, certainly it does appear that way. And then there's a malignant narcissist. What's a malignant narcissist?
Malignant narcissist. Well, when you start looking at narcissism and, you know, I mean, just like malignant cancer is bad for you. It's, you know, it's typically a negative situation you want to stay away from. It comprises, you know, a usually grandiosity that can become very hostile. They tend to undermine, you know, like if they have their business, they would undermine their own business just to maintain their narcissism. And they tend to dehumanize other people that they work with. So it's pretty potent. It's pretty bad mental disorder or sickness.
And they come with a sense of superiority that isn't really based on a sense of true superiority, is it?
That's correct. And it tends to be, you know, it's almost delusional type superiority, but there may be some legitimate authority there, you know, the business owner, but they may not be the one who makes the world turn in their business. So
fascinating. Yes. Yeah. I've known people that I've believed were malignant narcissists, but again, I'm not a trained professional, so I'm not in a position to make that diagnosis. And then you've got people who are physical narcissists and mental narcissists, right?
Correct. You know, physical narcissist is, you know, it's when dealing with relationships, that tends to come out a lot. They feel grandiose. They have fantasies of fame and fortune. So they treat other people as if they're tools for them to get where they want to be. They tend to exploit other people without any kind of guilt or remorse. And you might easily associate them or think of them as possibly even maybe being a sociopath, where they don't, you know, feel any empathy for anybody else.
Right. And like a mental, intellectual narcissist, somebody who thinks they're so brilliant.
Right. Right.
They get the grandiose type thing going on. Right.
And that thing kind of carries on through the whole thing, that they are better than everybody else. And my experience working with them in my practice is it's almost as if, you know, they seem to be trying to convince you, but it's really they're trying to convince themselves almost.
Right. And these are classified as personality disorders by your organization. I can't remember the
APA and right. In the DSM they're the classified DSM. As right. Personality disorders. Yes.
Right. And there's no medication you can take that, hey, all right, you're a narcissist, take this pill and you'll stop being a narcissist. Right.
Essentially, but you know, why would they want to take a pill for something that is not a problem for them?
Well, they're really not happy people though, when you get down to it, right?
In most cases, they're not, and they end up realizing that you know there's something missing, and they can't find it. And that's if I can just manipulate, or not really manipulate, that's not what they're thinking. If I can just prove to everybody that I am really this good and this great, and it also makes them vulnerable because if people keep saying, you know, hey, calm down, you need to get down to earth and touch the ground again. They're actually kind of fragile, and they're potential candidates for suicide and suicidality and stuff like that.
And they can be easily manipulated, because when one comes across one of these people, flattery will get you everywhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, because if they believe that you really believe that they are such incredible people, or they're so beautiful, I mean, like supermodels really can be these narcissistic, self-absorbed people, and you just keep telling them how beautiful they are as you start taking the money out of their mm-hmm. bank account. They're really susceptible to all of this.
That's exactly right. I mean, look at rock stars. You have the same sort of syndrome, you know, where they've sold millions of albums and, you know, a fan walks up to them, tell them that they're the worst singer ever, and their world collapses and they have to be hospitalized.
Yeah. Yeah. So it could also, narcissism could also deal with a certain talent or skill that one possesses that, I mean, it could be a legitimate talent or skill yes. that sets you far above others, and yet it's just not enough.
It's not enough.
Because,
and I don't think there is enough. I mean, yeah. my experience working with narcissists, so, true narcissists. Mm-hmm.
So they get their sense of self from the way they affect others, in effect.
Yes, right? And they get essentially, you know, an addictive, you know, they get a little dopamine rush whenever they get that from other people. You know, when they get that like on Facebook, they get a dopamine rush.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people love me that I don't even know any of them, but they've liked me on Facebook, so I must be doing something right. And now we take it to the millennial generation. So it's a generalized kind of form of narcissism that we're talking about here. We're not talking about clinical, are we?
Right, right. Not a clinical level of narcissism.
Right. So in a way, that's more troubling, though, isn't it? Because, all right, somebody who you can diagnose with it. Oh, and one other thing before we get to that.
Okay.
This is a really, these personality disorders are really hard to treat, aren't they? I mean, group therapy, talk therapy, really hard to get somebody into recovery from one of these disorders.
Very difficult, and they're very resilient. You know, it's for example, if you get diagnosed with like depression, you can come out of your depression and lose that diagnosis over time. Personality tends to stick with you, and if you get diagnosed with that personality disorder, you're probably going to have it until they quit keeping your medical records.
All of these personality disorders, I guess, what always interested me is they all manifest themselves in a different way, whether it's borderline personality mm-hmm. disorder or antisocial, whatever it is. They all seem to be parts of the same whole, I guess. They manifest themselves in a different way, but there's no medications that seem to be effective on them. And they're kind of just with you for life.
Right.
which makes them, I guess, very dangerous.
And a source of problems for your whole existence from, you know, from when it gets identified until you're no longer here.
Yeah, because you interpret your whole perception of reality goes through this disorder.
And how you think everybody else perceives you.
Correct. So, but now we're talking about something different. We're talking about a narcissistic generation. It's like the Pepsi generation, right? I mean, it's something wholly different than the personality disorder. It's a cognitive disorder on a mass scale, but not rising to the point of individual personality disorder. So what is it that we're really talking about? It's that a generation has lost its ability to cope or to really manage reality to get where it needs to be, kind of trying to figure it out.
I think if we kind of back up just a little bit, I think we can look at it and, you know, no previous generation has ever looked back and said the generation coming up behind them isn't narcissistic. And it's not like, you know, we came from a totally, you know, non-narcissistic evangelical kind of, hey, let's help everybody. Total. We're not into that at all because human beings want to be liked. Okay. So there's some of that in all of us to some degree. And what's happening now is that when we look at the surveys, they're scoring much higher than they ever have before. And they even rate themselves higher than previous generations have rated themselves. But it doesn't mean, like you said, that they're all clinical level. You've got some added components. You got Facebook, you got Twitter, you got Pinterest, you got Snapchat, and they can feed their narcissism in ways that you and I never had the option to growing up.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the whole technology is kind of aiding and abetting the narcissistic tendencies that are already existent, effectively.
Yes. And when you have a generation that when they go into the workforce, we have to teach them that when they answer a business phone, that they need to identify the place of business and give their own name. They look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it's telling, and it's becoming a problem for businesses. In fact, you know, I've talked to some business leaders who said, you know, it's kind of an unwritten thing that unless there's something special about one of the millennials, that they're a high risk hire.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the millennials seem to have been the ones that got the participation trophies, you know?
Yes.
I'll never forget my kids. Oldest kid, we went to, it was the end of soccer and everybody got a trophy. And I'm like, looking at everyone, what is this about? Why are they getting trophies? Right. They didn't all, I know my kid didn't deserve a trophy. Is that just for showing up? Mm-hmm. You know, this mental state here.
Yeah, I've had students walk into my office after they're looking at a D for their semester average and go, I made it to every class. I deserve an A.
Yeah.
And I'm like, your test scores are D's. That's what you get.
You earned
it. You earned it. Exactly. You earned a D. And they argued with me for half an hour trying to convince me that because they showed up, they deserved an A.
Yeah. Well, that old thing of Woody Allen that 80% of life is showing up. I took it to heart. Yeah.
Amazing. But they forgot the other 20.
Yeah. They forgot. So, how do we deal with this as a society here? How do we stop enabling it? Because they can do this because they're enabled, right?
Right.
Society puts up with it, but we have to stop.
One of my students last week when we broached this conversation said that it was bad parenting that resulted in even better bad parenting. And, you know, parents are supposed to be there to help their children when they do fail, build themselves back up, not to protect them from ever failing.
Yeah.
And there's a group of us out there who don't let that happen. And, you know, it's a struggle. We want to protect our kids. My wife and I have had this conversation multiple times. Should we let our child fail at this point? And so far it's been, yes, let them fail and we'll help them build themselves back up. And I think my children are much better for it when kids come over to our house or when they go over to other kids' house and we get calls from their parents saying, God, you know, your kid's amazing. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's a very big compliment for me and my wife. But it's hard to do because I don't want to see my kids hurt and cry and be upset.
Yeah. But the worst thing you could do is trying to put your kid in a bubble and they never suffer and never learn to make their own decisions and rebound from the failures. You know, you only learn from failure. You don't learn from success.
Correct. And when I have a 30-year-old comes into my office and they're there primarily because their parents are pushing them and, you know, they don't have a job, they're living at their parents' house and they play PlayStation or Xbox all day and their parents are saying they have to come see me or they're gone. And it's like, it's a little late for them to be telling them that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say.
I've dealt with it.
Yeah. No, it's these kids are like overly protected and coddled, helicopter mothers, all that. Exactly. I've seen it firsthand. There's nothing good about this. So, and then it just, yeah, the millennial generation, that's what we're left with here. That's what we're stuck with.
I do want to say, I mean, you know, I hear you talk about your kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have, you know, an opportunity being at the university to see a lot of students. And I know there are some amazing kids out there. They're not every one of them mm-hmm. like that. But we have to weed through a lot to get to the fruit, if that makes any sense.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Well, certainly. It's unfortunate that this overindulged generation, but you know, the baby boomers, you know, they're a direct, I guess, result from the baby boomers. We're their parents. Mm-hmm. So, and I think the greatest generation who lived through the Depression didn't want their children to suffer the way they did, you know, from the Depression and World War II. And they overindulged the baby boomers. And then we repeated and compounded their mistakes. So
I think that's 100% accurate.
Yeah. And we've had such great economic times for, you know, with a couple of blips in there for really since we're going on 60, 70 years, you know, from the end of World War II. Yeah. 70 years. It's 1945 on. And, you know, they never really suffered, you know, minor blip. Well, the Great Recession really, really was bad. That was the worst that I've seen in my life.
Right.
So these kids have never really had to make it on their own or really see what it was like. And you know, just got all sorts of stuff thrown at them. So, well, hey, so three things you can do to not make your kid wind up a narcissistic millennial.
Don't give them everything. Make them work for stuff. Make them struggle and be there to support them. It's okay to let them fail. Be there to support them. Help pick them up. Those are two significant things. And then while you're failing and watching them fail, you got to support them emotionally and realize that failure isn't necessarily bad. So you got to be there and support them and love them that way. So those three things, you know, don't give them everything. Of course, we're going to give them things, but make them work for stuff. I can remember specifically in my own life when my parents said, here's how much money you have, you know, for a car when you start driving. If you want a better vehicle, you need to go get a job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what I did. So that's important right there. And don't be afraid to let your child fail. Mm-hmm. Help them pick up the pieces. Teach them coping skills in that process. And then reassure them that this is coming from a place of love. So that's three good things I would do.
Yeah. And my philosophy is make them clean up their own messes. You know,
amen.
They screw up. Let them know that they're going to be responsible for cleaning up the mess. And I didn't realize till afterwards how important a job in middle school as early as possible.
As early.
Make them get a job because then they learn how to be responsible for money. They learn that their actions in the workplace have consequences and responsibility, you know. They really
do. Exactly.
Accountability. So hey, people want to find out more about you. Any place they can go learn about
mainstreammentalhealth.org.
mainstreammentalhealth.org. We'll have a link to that on our site. If you got any questions, comments about this interview or others that we do, send me an email, kl@carrylutz.com, kl@carrylutz.com. You don't have to feel you're a narcissist doing it. We love to read your emails. Twitter feed is @CarrieLutz. The Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. And by the way, you can easily subscribe to the show on iTunes. If you're on a Mac or a PC, Macs automatically have iTunes. PCs, you have to download it, itunes.com. Go to the iTunes store, type in Carrie Lutz or Financial Survival Network, and just click the subscribe button. The show will automatically come to you. Hey, Dr. Huber, it's been a real pleasure having you on. Learned a lot from you. And hey, when the next millennial malady comes up, we will definitely have you back on the show.
Well, thank you very much, Carrie. It's a pleasure to be on.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.